Since the beginning of the year, we've been going through the book of Joshua. Taken me about sort of 4 or 5 months longer than I expected. Probably longer than you wanted. But I liked it. I've enjoyed this. And we finish with the great promise of the people to follow God. Promise, incidentally, which they didn't keep. At the book of Joshua, chapter 24. It's having a big, the last of three big assemblies that the book finishes with. And we looked at the opening to it last week. Now from verse 14, we'll carry on. "Now fear the Lord," says Joshua, "and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshipped beyond the river Euphrates and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." Then the people answered, "Far be it from us to forsake the Lord to serve other gods. It was the Lord our God himself who brought us out and our parents up out of Egypt from that land of slavery and performed these great signs before our eyes. He protected us on our entire journey and among all the nations through which we travelled. And the Lord drove out before us all the nations, including the Amorites who lived in the land. We too will serve the Lord because he is our God." And Joshua said to him, "Oh, you are not able to serve the Lord. He's a holy God. He's a jealous God. He will not forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you. And after he's been so good to you." But the people said to Joshua, "No, no, we will serve the Lord." Then Joshua said, "Okay." We didn't say okay. But he said, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen to serve the Lord." "Yes, we are witnesses," they replied. "Now then," said Joshua, "throw away the foreign gods that are among you and yield your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel." And the people said to Joshua, "We will serve the Lord our God and obey him." On that day, Joshua made a covenant for the people. And there at Shechem, he reaffirmed for them decrees and laws. And Joshua recorded these things in the book of the law of God. Then he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak near the holy place of the Lord. "See," he said to all the people, "this stone will be a witness against us. It has heard all the words the Lord has said to us. It will be a witness against you if you are untrue to your God." Then Joshua dismissed the people, each their own inheritance. The book of Deuteronomy ends with Moses in his final days trying to ensure that the people follow the covenant, the contract they made with God. And the book of Joshua looks back and says, listen, God has already fulfilled his part of all this. Now, are you going to fulfill yours? And it's all about choices. Martin Luther King, the preacher, said, "Of course I was religious. I grew up in the church. My father is a preacher. My grandfather was a preacher. My great-grandfather was a preacher. My only brother is a preacher. My daddy's brother is a preacher. So I didn't have much choice." But of course, he did have a choice. And he chose to kneel down in the road in front of armed policemen and pray for justice. We have a choice. All of us have a choice. Even Hollywood recognizes that we have a choice that directs our path. I'm going to show you a clip from a Hollywood film, Dangerous Minds. Love the clip. Perhaps it doesn't work for you. It works for me. Got choice. And that choice, whoever you are, you've got a choice. Wherever we come from in our society, whatever level of society we see ourselves living at, we've got a choice. And God's saying to us through his passage, you've got a choice. You've got a choice. You can choose who you serve. You can choose who you're going to follow all the days of your life. It's up to you. I'm going to give you a good option, says God, but you've got to follow it. You've got to choose it. It's not going to be automatic. And so Joshua is saying to the same thing to the people. Look, you are not victims. You know, you walked out of Egypt. You chose to follow God. At least your fathers chose to follow God. And here you are. Now you've got that choice. You're going to stay on that path or not. You're going to walk with God or not. Don't know that our choices are much different, to be honest. And the first thing I think he's saying in verses 14 and 15 is, listen, are you going to be wholehearted about this? Are you going to be wholehearted? Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Are you wholehearted about your following God? The American theologian and church historian, Phyllis Tickleth, says every 500 years or so, the church goes through great change. The church went for about sort of 300 years, 300 odd years, and then the emperor was converted and everything changed. And it went for another like 600, 700 years, and then there was a great split in the church between East and West. And then it kind of went on another 500 years, and this German monk called Martin Luther stood up and said, look, we're going the wrong way, guys. The church has lost the plot. And the whole Reformation broke out and the whole thing changed. And then it goes on another 500 years. And in 500 years, suddenly we get the whole world movement, the world missionary movement, where suddenly people all around the world start accepting Jesus. And the whole centre of gravity moves from the north to the south, from Western Europe to Africa, Asia, and South America. And the whole thing is changing. I think we're so close to it, we don't realise what a big difference that makes, except that we will be receiving, as a church, Christians from all around the world. Already this summer we've received Brazilian, we're receiving Philippines tonight. We're going to get Chinese Christians coming in, we're going to get Malaysian Christians coming in, we've had African Christians here in our church over the summer. And we'll probably get a few Koreans as well. And, you know, that's only happened in the last 100 years. And as the church goes through these things, it has to make a decision. Which path will we follow? And Joshua, we saw last week, has reminded them that their ancestors used to serve many gods. And in fact, in this passage, he says, in Egypt, you know, you used to do as well. God wasn't the only god. You would worship any god who you thought would give you an advantage. You were scared of all these deities in case they did something to you, so you placated them. But God is the only god. So we will serve the Lord, he says. But are you wholehearted about it? Are you wholehearted about it? If you're going to serve God, he says, just serve him wholehearted. There's no point going halfway. Then in verses 16 to 20, he warns him about being what I call double-hearted. Now, there is no such expression, really. I just made it up. I wrote half-hearted originally, but I don't think that's the point here. It's not that you're half-hearted serving God. You've got one heart that serves God and one heart that doesn't. I know it makes you sound like Doctor Who with two hearts, but the point is that you're double-minded, you know? Double-minded. Joshua just is not prepared to accept glib answers. Because sooner or later, you're going to be found out if you're not wholehearted. You're going to be found out. It's going to happen. People tend to nod agreement, then go off and carry on exactly as before. Trust me, it's every preacher's nightmare. You preach your heart out on a Sunday and everyone says, great sermon, Pastor, thank you very much. And then they go home on Monday, they've totally forgotten everything you said. Under the pressures of work, they're doing all the things wrong that they did last week. under the pressures of family doing all things wrong, under the pressures of temptation and stress and anxiety, everything else, it hasn't made the slightest difference. That's your nightmare as a preacher. That you're preaching lovely sermons and everyone's nodding agreement, but really their heart isn't in it. And Joshua says, listen, if you are wholehearted about this, you're going to see blessings. Verses 16 to 18. Remember how powerful God is. He brought us out of slavery. He performed great signs. He protected us on our journey. He drove out nations. Those are four massive miracles. When they trusted God, God did all four things. Took them out of slavery, performed great signs, protected them on their journey, and drove out nations. That strikes me as being a pretty good deal. If you're going to serve a God who does that, well, I for one am going to sign up to that. God's going to protect me on my journey, if God's going to keep me free of slavery, if God's going to drive out enemies before me, it's a God worth following. That's what will happen, he says, if you're faithful to God. Now, verse 19 says, don't mess with him. You're not able to serve the Lord. My translation is, don't mess with the Lord. He's a holy God. He's a jealous God. He'll not forgive your rebelling and your sins. Don't cover over the crap. We're very good at that, by the way, as a church, aren't we? Churches. We're very good. We paper over the cracks. It's not as bad as it looks, really. Well, actually, it is. Problems are there. You're just not really admitting them. It's a slight problem. But God says, don't do that. You've got to face your problems head on. It's the only way. Don't keep walking around them. And I've seen churches disintegrate because nobody was prepared to confront the problem. I've seen many things. I saw a young pastor and his wife just kind of die the death in the church. They got to the church and then discovered there was a massive problem of child abuse in the church. And it had been there all through the interregnum, but nobody had actually done anything about it. And the new pastor arrives in the church full of hope, and wham, the first thing he discovers is this mess to unravel. And it wrecked him, you know. There wasn't any way. He spent so much time sorting that out, his ministry never really got off the ground in that place. Don't mess with God. Don't gamble with your eternal soul. You're risking your eternal survivor. You're risking your eternal survival if you're moving away, if you're ignoring God. George Whitefield was a great preacher of the 18th century. And a wonderful preacher. Great evangelist. Had his faults, like we all do. But he says about this passage from one of his sermons, if neither gratitude to God, love to your children, common justice to your servants, not even that most prevailing motive of self-interest will excite, yet let a consideration of the terrors of the Lord persuade you to put in practice the pious resolution in this text. If all else fails, get scared of God. If nothing else will persuade you. And yeah. Double-hearted. And then there's a changed heart or a changed heart in verses 21 to 27. This chapter began with a dark history of spiritual darkness from which Abraham was rescued and the slavery from which Israel was rescued. And it's kind of saying, I think, you know, you're going to end up a slave whether you like it or not. Now, I just, I love it when secular poets and musicians and films reflect, mirror what's actually in the Bible. I came across this from St. Bob Dylan. It's one of his early songs. I think it's great. You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You may like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. Might be a rock and roll addict prancing on a stage. You might have money and drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief. You may be a state trooper. You might be a young Turk. You may be the head of some big TV network. You may be rich or poor. You may be blind or lame. You may be living in another country under another name. But you're going to have to serve somebody, yeah. You're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. You may be a construction worker working on a home. You may be living in a mansion or you might live in a dome. You might own guns. You might even own tanks. You might be someone's landlord. You might even own banks. You may be a preacher with your spiritual pride. You might be a city councilman taking bribes on the side. You may be working in a barber shop. You may know how to cut hair. You may be somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. Might like to wear cotton, might like to wear silk, might like to drink whiskey, might like to drink milk. You might like to eat caviar, might like to eat bread. You may be sleeping on the floor, sleeping in a king-size bed. You may call me Terry, you may call me Jimmy, you may call me Bobby, you may call me Zimmy. You may call me RJ, you may call me Ray. You may call me anything, but no matter what you say, you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed. You're going to have to serve somebody. It may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. Joshua didn't quite say it like that. I wish he had. That's good. That's what Joshua's saying. You're going to end up serving somebody. And if you walk away from the Lord, you're going to end up serving these other gods and their patterns of living and their mindset and their values, and it's going to bring you right down to the ground. It's your choice. It's your choice. So people say, no, we will serve the Lord and obey him. We're given that choice, they couldn't hardly say anything else. So Joshua records it in the minutes and he builds a memorial stone. Well, how they stepped out of slavery into God's kingdom. Which is, of course, what Jesus is offering us today. It's no different. The choice is the same. You're going to serve somebody. You're going to serve Jesus. You're going to serve the world. You're going to serve the Lord. You're going to serve the devil. It's the choice we've got. Joshua finishes on a high. The book of Joshua finishes on a great high. And the people say yes, and they build this little stone monument to say, this is where we decided to follow God. But don't be fooled. This book isn't saying that the people overcame all the odds and succeeded. Actually, what the book of Joshua has told us from beginning to end is that God succeeded. The people kind of half got there but didn't. Joshua chapter 1 verse 9 was the verse we began with. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And that was true. The book of Joshua beginning to end proves that's true. The book of Judges which follows it proves that the people really never got hold of it. They were only halfway. They were double hearted. And then this is Joshua's last recorded activity. He steps down, he retires, and very soon afterwards, if the text is to be understood, he dies. Matthew Henry, the great commentator, you must never think our work for God is done till our life is done. I've got a poem about that. You know me well enough now to know that John Donne, the 16th century poem, is my favourite poet. And this is a hymn to God the Father by John Donne. That's how it's pronounced. He plays with his name in this poem. It's one of the things he does quite often in his poems. He puns on his name, and that it makes a lot more sense. It's all powerful if you realise he's actually deliberately punning with his name. John Donne was a wild young man. It's what they used to call a rake. Do you know what I mean by that? He's a womanizer, a drinker, waster, wasting his life. And things were going downhill. He was in a bad place. And then suddenly he met, and you're going to think he met the Lord. No, he didn't. He met a woman. He met Anne. And he fell totally in love with the most beautiful woman. And they were secretly married. Her father disinherited her for it. And they were married, and he loved her passionately all through her life. She bore 8 children, and she died in childbirth. And he never remarried. He was grief-stricken until the day he died about the loss of Anna. He never stopped being in love with Anna. Even decades after her death, he was still in love with that beautiful woman he'd loved and married and been faithful to all their life. But in that despair, John turned to God. And that was the point when he turned to God. He became a minister, became a preacher. He used to preach in the open air in Charing Cross. If you've been to Charing Cross Station, there used to be a cross out there. That's where the preachers used to take open-air services. And John used to preach. And the people of London used to come in large numbers to hear John Dunn preach in the open air to them and expound the scriptures to them. He was the most godly of men. And he wrote poetry. In his early days, he wrote erotic poetry. And then, after Anne died, he began to write some of the sublimest Christian poetry that's ever been written. Anyway, this is his poem. He's talking about his sins. He's recognizing the sins of his life. And he says this: "Wilt thou forgive that sin where I begun, which was my sin, though it were done before? Wilt thou forgive that sin through which I run and do run still, though still I do deplore? When thou hast done, thou hast not done, for I have more." Got the pun there? When thou hast done, thou hast not done. You haven't got me yet. Yeah? "Wilt thou forgive that sin which I have won others to sin and made my sin their door? Wilt thou forgive that sin which I did shun a year or two but wallowed in a score? When thou hast done, thou hast not done, for I have more. I have a sin that when I have spun my last, I have a sin of fear, that when I have spun my last thread, I shall perish on the shore. But swear by thyself that at my death thy sun shall shine as he shines now and heretofore. And having done that, thou hast done, I fear no more. You've got me, Lord. You've got me. I've made my choice, and it's you."